listening to Cinema Jaw, the greatest movies podcast ever. Recorded on location this week at C2E2 here in Chicago. My name is Matt Kay, and with me is...
Ryan the Movie Guy, Matt. And this week on Cinema Jaw, we get our geek on big time as we invade C2E2 from our booth here, Q17.
The landmark, Q17. Really, they built the entire show around booth Q17, Rye.
I like to think that we are the center of C2E2.
Yeah, clearly. Actually, that is not even, you know, obviously we're here and it's awesome, but there's some really interesting stuff here, and wow, what a show this is going to be. I'm so excited.
It is. We got a lot of interviews lined up, and C2E2 each year gradually grows bigger and bigger, and this is the biggest it's ever been, Matt.
I was very, very surprised when I walked in and saw the scope of this year's C2E2. I think this thing is doubled. I mean, it's just the footprint of it alone is enormous. Definitely bigger than last year by about 50%.
We got some interviews lined up this week, Jawheads. This is a special edition of Cinema Jaw from C2E2. Up first, we are going to interview Bruce Boxleitner.
Yeah, and Bruce is obviously, you might know him from Tron.
He played Tron.
He played Tron.
We are going to interview Tron.
That's cool, right? That is really cool. And he also reprised that role in Tron Revolutions or...
Legacy.
Tron Legacy. I'm thinking of the Disney XD Tron Revolutions, which he's also voicing Tron once again. So he's Mr. Tron.
Yeah, and other fans, other Jawheads may know him from Babylon 5.
Right.
Where he played the president in there. He was also, go way back in time, Scarecrow and Mrs. King. He was the Scarecrow.
And he's actually a really nice guy. I'm so excited to talk to him about his new project coming up, Lantern City.
Yeah, and Lantern City, it's such a cool concept. It's an idea here where fans actually get to interact with the project. They can email and go onto their website and actually do artwork, and the producers and people behind the scenes will pick certain things, and you will then see your artwork in the show, be it a costume, earrings, even a setting.
Yeah, it's really interesting the way they're crowdsourcing that. It's the future of media, I think.
Yeah, we're going to talk to Bruce about that. I'm really excited about that. We also have the guy who runs this entire event.
Yeah, we were lucky enough to snag Lance Fensterman. Obviously, this is a very busy day for him. But he took a few moments out of his schedule, and he's going to be joining us.
It's going to be absolutely awesome. I can't wait to ask Lance, too, how much bigger it is, because I swear, it like you said, double in size. It's like, how did it get to be this big?
I know.
It's humongous.
Yeah, definitely.
In addition to that, we're also going to sit down with, this is a hero of Matt's, J. Scott Campbell. He is an artist who ended up being right across the booth from us. He said he would come over and tell the Jawheads a little bit about J. Scott Campbell.
Well, if you're into comics at all, Rye, which I know that you're not, but a lot of our listeners probably are, J. Scott Campbell is a name that's going to be familiar to you. He does covers for Marvel, The Amazing Spider-Man being one of the titles he works on, and he did a book back in the late 90s, early 2000s called Danger Girl, which I was a huge fan of, and he is an absolutely extremely talented, nerd boner worthy artist, and excited to talk to him.
That's awesome. I can't wait to get him over here. And in fact, I'm going to ask him to also judge us in Cinema War.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So Cinema War this week is going to be looking at who's the best comic book movie director. Can't wait to get there.
That's going to be awesome. Can't wait.
Also, when Lance gets over here, we're going to have Lance take you on in trivia. Lance has been on Cinema Jaw once before.
And I believe I beat him last time.
You did, animated movie trivia.
So you're giving him a chance for a rematch.
Yes.
Okay.
In honor of The Great Gatsby opening up, we are going to be playing Leonardo DiCaprio, Tobey Maguire movie trivia.
Ouch.
We are also going eye for an eye on The Great Gatsby. Plus, we have a review of Mud with Matthew McConaughey. Plus, you caught...
I caught With Great Power on Netflix, a documentary about Stan Lee.
And because we are at C2E2, we decided to take advantage of some of the interesting characters crawling around, and we have a poll question up. What summer superhero movie are you looking forward to the most? And we actually got audio clips of people coming by, and we're going to get some more, and we're going to play those for you as well.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Jam-packed as always, Matt. Jam-packed as always.
Jam-packed. And we should mention also, we have a few other little random interviews that we're going to throw in. I shouldn't say random. There's a lot of interesting people here at C2E2, and if we can, Rye, we're gonna rope them in and take a few minutes to say what's going on with you guys.
Sounds great. So sit back and relax and enjoy this special edition C2E2 of Cinema Jaw. Up first, Matt, is Eye for an Eye, Interested or Ignore, and Eye for an Eye is sponsored by
MoviePass.
MoviePass, unlimited movies in the theater for one low price.
You just can't beat that, right?
No. Go to MoviePass.com, enter the code CinemaJaw when you're checking out. You'll save $15 on your first month, and at that point, you are in a club that allows you to go see unlimited movies at any theater across the country for one low price.
You can't beat that. Like I said, that's phenomenal.
We thank MoviePass for their sponsorship of CinemaJaw. Eye for an Eye, Matt, The Great Gatsby, an adaptation of F. Scott Fitzgerald's A Long Island-set novel, where Midwesterner Nick Carraway is lured into a lavish world of his neighbor, Jay Gatsby. Soon enough, however, Carraway will see through the cracks of Gatsby's rich existence, where obsession, madness, and tragedy await. The film stars Leonardo DiCaprio, Tobey Maguire, and Carey Mulligan. The movie's score was done by Jay-Z and is directed by Baz Luhrmann. Matt, interested or ignore on The Great Gatsby?
I'm very interested in Great Gatsby. Even though, you know, I'm going to make a confession here. I've never read the book.
Ooh.
So
that is a confession.
I think I should probably read the book first. I'm going to wind up seeing the film.
I have read the book, and I've actually read it twice. I refreshed about a year ago because I knew this movie was in the works. I am also very interested in The Great Gatsby. And a couple things. I love Baz Luhrmann's Moulin Rouge. I think it's absolutely spectacular. It's one of my favorite films. It would most definitely rank in my top 30 or 40 films of all
time.
You
talk about it a lot. You love this movie.
I sure do. He had a misfire a little bit with Australia. I think he's going to come back strong here. It's the second time he's working with DiCaprio. He also directed Romeo and Juliet back in the day when DiCaprio was opposite Claire Danes.
Yep.
So I'm interested in two. It's in 3D, so I can't wait to see what Baz Luhrmann, with all his sort of glitz on screen and that razzle that he's got, brings. Let's see what he's going to do in 3D. It's going to be a lot of fun.
The 3D doesn't change my opinion either way, but I'm excited for the movie on its own merits. Not the 3D. It's gimmick.
All right. Two interested, however.
Definitely.
For The Great Gatsby.
Yes.
And speaking of new movies, Matt, I got out and I caught Mud with Matthew McConaughey. And let me tell you, that Matthew McConaughey plays the title character Mud, a drifter of sorts who is living in an old boat that is stuck in a tree. The film is set in rural Arkansas along the Mississippi River, and the setting and the characters are so rich and interesting. Two young boys stumble across Mud when they go to investigate the abandoned boat themselves. A friendship is formed between the boys and this shifty stranger. After the boys hear Mud's story explaining why he is living on this river island and avoiding town, they agree to help him get the boat fixed up for him to set sail. They also agree to help track down his girlfriend, played by Reese Witherspoon, who is at a hotel waiting to hear from Mud. She is not the only one looking for him, however, as there is a bounty on his head, Matt. The story reminded me of the great coming-of-age movie Stand By Me, which can only be a good thing. Like director Jeff Nichols' past two films, Take Shelter and Shotgun Stories, the characters are so well written, so well played, you can't help but care for them by the end. I love the unique story and setting. McConaughey continues the role that he is on with another outstanding role. This is one of the best independent films of 2013. Rye the Movie Guy's grade, 3.5 Jaws, a solid B+.
Wow. Sounds good.
I love interesting films. We just don't get enough of those, like, unique stories. A boat abandoned
in a tree. So at this point, I don't think you're going to be calling McConaughey the shirtless wonder anymore.
Matt, this guy has made a rebound like you wouldn't believe. I loved him in last year's Killer Joe.
Sure.
He was spectacular in Bernie.
Awesome in Bernie.
Even liked him in Magic Mike. And now Mud. It's like, wow. All right. I like me some Full Metal McConaughey.
All right.
Yes. B+ for Mud. Matt, what'd you catch?
I saw With Great Power, which is a documentary. It's available on Netflix right now, instant streaming. And it's about Stan the Man. I thought it fitting before C2E2 I should check out this film. And it's actually a really good in-depth look at Stan. We get to know him as a child, and then his early career and how he started at Timely Comics, which became Marvel, and how he's really been the torchbearer for Marvel from the very get-go, and the trials and tribulations he's gone through both in his professional and personal life. the guy's 90 years old now. I think he might have been like 87, 88 when they filmed this. They filmed it a couple years ago. But the career that Stan Lee has, obviously, is a remarkable one. And I don't know if we'd be sitting here talking about comic books and stuff like that at C2E2 were it not for Stan. So,
how many Jaws on the movie?
Because I got to see his personal life, it was pretty interesting. I'm giving this 3 Jaws. It's a good doc. It's not hard-hitting or doesn't dig too deep. They don't uncover any secrets. But it was cute. It was a nice character piece on Stan Lee.
Nice. And speaking of comics, Matt, we got a poll up. What movie, our summer superhero movie, are you looking forward to the most? And our poll question was Iron Man 3, mm-hmm. Man of Steel.
Yeah.
Or Wolverine 2, The Wolverine.
Well, of those three, I got to go with Man of Steel.
I also have to join you with Man of Steel with that vote.
And there was a time, I might even go back and try to find the clip when you were poo-pooing Man of Steel. You're like, it's going to suck.
I know.
But you've flipped the script, huh?
You know, the trailer looks great, and Michael Shannon, who is playing General Zod, is an absolute favorite of mine.
Sure.
This actor is getting ready to be the thing in Hollywood. I've loved him for many years. I actually saw Michael Shannon at the Steppenwolf Theater in a play, The Pillow Man. And this was when no one knew who Michael Shannon was. And he was playing the title character, The Pillow Man. And I called him The Pillow Man for a good year and a half when he would pop up in movies. I'm like, oh, The Pillow Man's in this, you know? And now I think even more the masses are going to realize what a talent Michael Shannon is as General Zod.
I agree. It's poised to be the movie of the summer.
Yeah. Now, we got this poll up here at C2E2, and we encourage people who are walking by to come by and vote on the poll. And we decided to throw out the microphone and get a couple takes on what people think of this poll question. So take a listen. So which superhero movie do you guys want to see most this summer?
Iron Man 3, by far.
All right, we've heard from the Stormtroopers now, Rye. Perfect.
Aiden Horan. And I want to see Man of Steel because I like Superman a lot and I think it'll be a good movie.
My name is Gary Lewis. I want to see Man of Steel because the last Wolverine movie sucked and I've already seen 2 Iron Man movies.
My name's Jeremy. I want to see Man of Steel the most because General Zod looks like a badass.
Matt voted Iron Man 3 because the first 2 kicked butt.
I'm Mandy. I voted Iron Man 3 because, come on, Robert Downey Jr. is Iron Man.
My name is Pete. I'm not voting because I'm too old for this shit.
But you don't want to see Man of Steel?
I'm not 15 anymore. The superhero genre has kind of lost its appeal when you turn 50.
But you're wearing a Shazam t-shirt.
Shush. Quiet.
My name is Brandon Branch, and I voted for Man of Steel because it looks awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome. The whole movie just looks fantastic, honestly. I am very excited, very excited.
Hey, I'm Josh, and I'm from the Movie Nights podcast. And I didn't vote for Iron Man because, I've seen the other two, so might as well go for something I haven't seen yet, and that's a good Superman movie.
My name is Courtney, and I didn't vote for Man of Steel because I haven't heard too much about it yet, but I know the Iron Man story, and it's kind of interesting to see what they'll do next.
My name's David Light, and I voted for Iron Man 3 because Iron Man wearing a suit of America is awesome.
You were saying something about Christopher Nolan disappointing, though.
Yeah, The Dark Knight Rises, it was good, but it just didn't float my boat as much as I wanted it to. This is me being cynical. So I'm not Man of Steel, I'm not super looking forward to, but Iron Man, America. I love America. And Iron Man's okay, so it's going to be great.
My name is Eleni Levandopoulos, and I voted for Wolverine because I've loved him since I was 3 years old. I grew up with Wolverine, and I'm so excited to see what Hugh Jackman does now.
Hi, my name is Ben, and the reason I voted for Wolverine is because he's the underdog in this race.
All right, my name is Jacob, and the reason I voted for Man of Steel because Superman is strong, and he don't back down for nothing.
I didn't vote for Iron Man 3 because Gwyneth Paltrow is in it. Edward Pledger.
My name is Colton Nelson, and I voted for Iron Man 3 over Man of Steel because I like the continuity of the Marvel franchises.
All right, I'm Alex Smith, and I voted for Wolverine because Wolverine's a badass, and I want to see what he's doing in Japan.
Hi, my name's Anne, and this is my first time at this kind of cartoon gala. I picked the Wolverine because I like animals better than I like men.
My name is Clint Page, and I voted for Iron Man 3 because it has a good previous track record.
Hey, my name is Dan Johnson. I voted for Iron Man 3 because they're finally using his best villain, the Mandarin.
But also because you wanted to spite Rye the movie guy.
Also to spite him.
Well done.
My name's Amy Johnson, and I chose the Wolverine because I really like the character.
Okay, my name's Matt Santori Griffith, and I vote for Man of Steel because the last trailer totally proved to me that the character could look awesome, and Lois Lane also could be totally cool.
Oh, man. I tell you, Matt, these guys are crazy at C2E2.
My favorite was the Stormtroopers, personally.
Oh, you could barely hear them.
Well, you always got to have the Stormtroopers weigh in when you're talking at C2E2.
Yeah. Like,
you got to get their opinion on things.
Oh, boy. I tell you, a lot of people are definitely very, very opinionated here at the festival.
Yes, indeed. They sure are.
And, you know, while we get these other guests throughout the show, we should also sort of do a summer movie preview. Besides those three summer picks, is there something else that you're excited to see, Matt?
Me personally? I'd say Thor. Well, you're not counting that as a summer movie, right?
It's a fall movie.
It's a fall movie. Okay, so strictly summer. I guess besides the three you mentioned, I would say Star Trek.
Sure, that's going to be a big one.
It's make it or break it time. Is he going to be able to get 2-3 movies deep into this, or was it a once in a lifetime thing? So we're going to find out.
Yeah, I also very excited for Elysium with Matt Damon and Jodie Foster.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And then what do you think of this Pacific Rim? Have you seen the trailer?
I have, yeah. Jax from Sons of Anarchy is in that, if I'm not mistaken. Forget the actor's name off the top of my head, but yeah, it looks cool. The giant robot action. I'm down with that.
Might be able to check it out. I thought originally, before I saw the trailer, I was probably more excited. But the trailer looks like it's sort of a cheesy Transformers to me, too.
Yeah, it's got a bit of that element. But you know what? Nobody can make it worse than Michael Bay, so I'm willing to give this one a shot.
That's good. What we'll do, too, is when we interview all these guests here at C2E2, we'll ask them their opinion, what movie they're looking forward to most this summer as well.
Awesome.
So let's get started, Matt.
Yeah, and let's bring it on. What do you say?
Yeah, I agree. Let's get started here, Matt. Let's make our way over to Bruce Boxleitner. You probably know him as playing Tron in both Tron and Tron Legacy, as Matt had said. He voices Tron on the animated series. He's also been in Babylon 5.
He's done a lot of stuff.
He does. And his new project, Lantern City. I'm not even kidding, Jawheads. I am super stoked for Lantern City.
Yeah, me too. You know, I'm a steampunk fan. I'm not going to put on goggles or gears or anything, but I certainly appreciate it as an art movement, and it's cool that they're trying to be the Star Wars of steampunk. So
yeah, and we're going to sit down now with Bruce and a couple of producers and writers for the new series Lantern City.
Well, here you go. All right, you're listening to Cinema Jaw. We're here at C2E2 with Bruce Boxleitner and the guys from Lantern City. So before we get started, guys, why don't you each say your name and what you do for the project?
Bruce Boxleitner, co-creator, executive producer.
I'm Trevor Crafts. I'm also the co-creator and executive producer.
Matthew Daly, writer.
Now, the interesting thing about Lantern City is this idea. Matt was commenting about this as well, that you are actually reaching out to the fans to get ideas for artwork and storylines as well, or just the artwork?
Right now, just artwork. So basically what we've done is we've created a workers' forum where steampunk makers and artists can essentially submit their own prop designs, costume designs. Steampunk is such a wonderful community of makers. They're so adept at building things and creating artwork that really rivals Hollywood prop houses. And so we wanted to make sure that the fans were engaged because nobody's really been able to crack the steampunk code, as it were, in media. We really haven't seen anything that was great, true steampunk television or film. They've dabbled a bit here and there, but engaging the fan base first, showing them that their work was going to be highlighted. Basically, you submit online and you have a chance to have your work featured on the show on a prop. So maybe that somebody designs a wonderful pair of earrings, and then in one of the episodes, Martha Ellen Gray, who's played by Mira Furlan, will be wearing them in an episode. So just like little prop extras that just helps with our imagination and the whole collective imagination of all the fans.
Yes, I think in creating Lantern City, I think the detail, those tiny details like those earrings, are very important. All of the steampunk. I don't know that a Hollywood prop house would go to such detail and imagination as some of the things that we've seen. Yeah. It's incredible, and there's no limit to it, you know. I think this is a really good way to go.
And take us to the roots of Lantern City. Who came up with the idea, and how did it get started?
I had the idea a couple of years ago, sort of a much more pared down story, but just the idea of somebody traveling to a different place in this sort of fanciful and amazing epic steampunk world. And Bruce and I had worked on a pilot together. I was executive producing a pilot called Smokewood, Nevada, which was about it's a comedy western, which is sort of like Tombstone meets The Office.
Nice.
Bruce was playing Johnny Morgan, the old cattle baron. And
yes, I was.
Yes, you were. And so. But I was looking for a partner. I was looking for somebody that wasn't just a Hollywood person, but somebody that really understood what it would take to build a huge world. Bruce, obviously, through Frontier Earth and his other novels, he's a great writer. He's got the experience and the understanding, like, you know, saying earlier about just having the understanding from Babylon 5 and things like that. And then we brought Matt on. Matt and I had worked together. Matt and I won an Emmy together for a documentary that we produced in 2009. And it was the right pairing. It was the right team. And Matt really took what Bruce and I had in our heads and just exploded.
Put it on paper. It was amazing.
And I still feel a little weird about it. I'm not so fresh.
You should.
You're still in my head. It's weird.
Well, no, I think that, you know, what Dave's both said to me, especially after I really got working, even just on all of the outlines and all these things, is that, like, we saw this as a big scale, but you've made it a lot bigger than we even thought, which they were good with because it was, you know, a very rich world and stuff like that. But,
I think very doable production-wise. Doable without being tremendous. Well, everything's expensive today, okay, but it's the degree of expense, and I think this we have the technologies today that are can do this.
Yeah,
you know, say that in the 90s when we did Babylon 5, the effects shots and things like that, which was a combination certainly of practical sets, built sets, and early CGI. You know, and television was still very new to that, and which I think they did a marvelous job. But more importantly, I think this show is about an ensemble, you know, compelling characters the audience, we hope, will become intrigued by, fall in love with, be abhorred by, whatever, and want to follow every week, just like we have with Game of Thrones and Boardwalk Empire and so on and so forth.
And the premise of Lantern City is this idea that there's this alternate Earth that the characters actually travel to through a lantern. Mm-hmm. Can they travel back from that alternate Earth, or once they've traveled there, are they stuck there?
It's the nice thing, what we've done is that nobody knows. It's not like the Stargate, where you go through on one side and you see the telephone on the other side, and if you know the code, you go back. I think that's really what sort of enhances the drama, and what Matt certainly has put down on paper is this idea that there's no way home. You don't know if you're ever going to get back. And so when Rachel, who's one of the three main characters from our world, is transported to Lantern City through this lantern, she doesn't know if she's ever getting home. And so what do you do if you don't know if you're ever getting home? How do you change your personality? And Max tries to find her and sees her in this lantern image and falls through the lantern image as well to go and see her for just another minute. I mean, that's really, I think, also at its core, it's really about how far would you be willing to go to be with that person that you love more than anything for just one more minute, just one more second to be able to see her again. And it's about that drive to find people that really, I think, is in the, that's what's in the middle of this whole huge story.
And I don't think any of the characters know how they even got there. No one has put it together that it was that thing that, you know, initially.
Right, like the,
but the mystery of this show will be also, what is it that got them there through this marvelously ornate slide projector? You know, wood and brass and big lenses lantern and things like that. This magic lantern, which they were called at that time. But they don't really understand how they got there or how they're going to get back.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say
that. I think that gives the storylines.
If you want to quote, like, put it in quotes, like the science behind it, we don't necessarily explore because we're really interested in how are these characters involved in this world. And our three main characters from our present day world, they all are forced to change. Just to survive, they cannot be the same people they were. And so it's one of the things we explore too is who are they really? Are they the people in Lantern City? Is that who they really are? Who are they people? Because we see them a little bit from before. And that's just, you know, one of the great things that fans will be able to grab onto, you know, like, oh, is she really that way? And, you know, so.
And I think we learned in the Star Wars universe, George Lucas sort of ruined the Force when he started talking about midichlorians, and he got too scientific
about
it.
Yeah, once you try to explain the magic, it's gone.
Exactly. Oh, I love episode one.
Actually, you really?
Well, I guess this interview's over.
No, I think what's important is that the magic.
Right.
Actually, that...
suspending your imagination and your belief and going with it. I want the audience to go with it. You know, and forget about trying to explain it.
Another thing, too, that I did, I mean, because we are, you know, fanboys as well, is I built the world that we will never see on the show. So if we were going to have our episodes 1 through 3, we've built that before we got to our show, mm-hmm. because it needs to be authentic. Right, you don't want to like, oh, well, we're going to do this prequel series. Now, what the hell would that we do? I don't know. Well, yeah, let's explain the lantern, I guess. And
We don't want to run out of, we're not going to run out of steam. That's the nice part.
I see what you did there. Very good. Woo! Actually, that brings me to one of my questions. It's easy to take for granted here at C2E2 that everyone knows what we're talking about, but maybe some of our listeners don't know. What is steampunk?
I think that's left to interpretation. It's our version of it is going to be Lantern City. But I knew what it was when I saw it. I've saw it at conventions years ago when I first started going to these conventions. And being a history lover, I think all three of us are, that's a fascinating period. But I knew it when I saw it, but I didn't know what to call it. And I want audiences in near future to say, what is steampunk? Oh, that's that show Lantern City.
But, I mean, I think for the a lot of people categorize it as like a Victorian futurism. It's the idea that if steam technology and clockwork technology was taken to some impossible level, that our modern computers could be built out of steam and things like that. I think that's really the crux of it. But there's a lot of political intrigue about in most steampunk stories, which definitely is very true in ours as well. You've got the Grey Empire, the workers, this growing underground. There's all these political classes that are constantly in flux and pushing and pulling, and which is very much that Victorian ideal. Steampunk is this growing social movement almost in fashion. Prada has now steampunk lines of clothes.
Yeah, definitely an art movement.
Yeah, mm-hmm. very much so. IBM just predicted that the next year is going to be the year of steampunk through their algorithms about how many posts there are online and mm-hmm. These kinds of things. I know there's a bunch of steampunk reality shows that are in development right now. So it's definitely the time is sort of coming into their own, and it's an interesting group of people because they don't have any media. Steampunk fans have no Star Wars to latch on to. They have no, Oblivion movie series. There's nothing. There's nothing that's really that they really love, and that's one of the things that we've set out to do is to be the first show that really wears the badge proudly of steampunk.
Right, and I think it's important for us because we definitely want our steampunk fans, and I know they're hungry for it, but we also need a wider audience. So, like my elevator pitch for the show is like it's The Wire in a futuristic Victorian setting. Because you have all these different strata that are, competing and intertwined and all that stuff. Bruce said, people say, that is steampunk, but it's a lot bigger than that, too.
Yes, of course it is, yeah. It's left up to interpretation.
So for the Jawheads listening to this, we call our fans the Jawheads, and they want to get involved with Lantern City, where's the best place to find more information online?
The best place to go is lanterncitytv.com, which is our main website, and also gives us links to the Facebook page and the Twitter page as well off of lanterncitytv.com, and that's really the most important thing right now. That's what networks care about is viewers and fans and that pre-built fan base, and that's if you really want to help Lantern City, follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook. Those are the numbers that really count.
And awesome. Bruce, obviously we're a movie podcast. We got to talk to you a little bit about Tron, as we do top 5 lists every week, and Tron pops up numerous times on different lists.
Isn't that amazing? It still amazes me after 30 years. It's crazy.
And I wanted to ask, too, the idea that Tron back in the day was such a game changer as far as the effects, and so was Tron Legacy when it came out as far as mm-hmm. the 3D. Mm-hmm. What was it like making the first Tron with all technology?
Like what we were talking about at Lantern City, you didn't know you were doing that at the time. We were doing something that could have been an abysmal failure. Everyone knew it. Steven Lisberger, who had brought this idea out from, he was from Boston, You know, I mean, this was, I give Disney tremendous credit because they are willing to, a first-time director, Joe Kaczynski, by the way, too, with Tron Legacy, and this new idea, and is it going to work, you know? It almost didn't, you know. There were so many things that happened. I think people also think that Tron was CGI, and it was put in the CGI toaster and popped up, and it was all colorful. It was actually a blend of old school sitting down and hundreds of people in Taiwan hand-painting every cell. 62,000 each cell had to be done.
My head hurts thinking about that.
Yeah, it was beyond belief. And it was about 20 minutes, actually, of this CG at that time it was called. And now, and the strange story is that Tron was exempt from the 1982 Oscars in animation because we were accused of cheating. We used a computer.
Wow. How times have changed.
How times have changed. So it's a marvelous phenomenon that keeps living on. I'm just so happy and proud to be a part of it. And I know the third one is in the works. That's all I know. I have no other things to tell you, but I think that says a lot, you know.
And you're also voice Tron on the animated series
the
for
animated
Disney?
Animated series as well, yeah, yeah. So I've done all things Tron. I'm the Kingdom Hearts game, Tron 2.0. I've kind of kept at it, and for some reason I just realized this horse is going to keep running for a while, and I want to be with it.
Thank you guys awesome. So much. Yeah, and thank you. Jawheads, we'll be right back with more interviews at C2E2.
And we are back here at C2E2, Rye. We're joined by J. Scott Campbell. Scott, how you doing? You go by Scott, right?
I do, actually, yeah, yeah. Sister and I went our entire lives being called our middle names, so you have to ask my parents why that happened. But
What's the first initial stand for?
Jeff. Yeah, a lot of people think it's Jason. I have no idea. That comes up all the time when people say Jason. I'm like, why assume that? But they always assume Jason.
My head, I was going James.
Oh, yeah. That's actually a little more unique, but it's in the ballpark.
I was thinking maybe just J-A-Y.
Why not?
Could
that
be.
Works too.
And we should mention for the Jawheads listening that Scott here is one of the hottest artists in comics. I think that's fair to say. He's known for doing Danger Girl, and right now he's doing a lot of really great covers for Marvel.
Yeah,
I mean, Spider-Man. Tell us about some of the stuff you're doing for Marvel.
I'm thankfully in a position where I'm a bit of a go-to guy. If they need to move some comics, they put a cover of mine on there and it gets them a little extra boost in like sales, that sort of thing. I seem to be the variant guy. If they need a variant cover to sort of boost the sales or boost the buzz of a cover, I tend to be a go-to guy right now, which isn't a bad place to be. It's a cool, you know, I didn't really get in this business thinking that that's where I'd end up, but it's a nice like kind of high-profile position to be in, so I do enjoy it.
And speaking of getting started, how did you get first involved in drawing comics?
I was drawing my entire life. I don't think there was a point where I don't remember drawing. I was always encouraged to draw from my family members. Nobody ever like said, "Oh, you shouldn't be doing that. You should be a lawyer." I had very creative parents who seemed to be very into the idea of me having a career in art. They weren't opposed to that. I think for many years, I thought I was actually going to be an animator. I kind of thought that's where I was going with this, you know, and but eventually comic books just kind of came about and they kind of just stole me away. I saw the unique expression that everybody could kind of have in comic books.
Yes.
It was sort of like everybody's encouraged to have their own voice, their own sort of like take on things. And that really spoke to me. I was like, you know, being an artist, you don't want to be dictated to how you have to draw everything. You want to have that leeway to do your own little spin on it. And comic books really embraces that and if anything encourages it. So.
And growing up, Matt sort of has informed me. I was never a huge comic book fan.
Neither was I, actually. It's funny you say that, actually. I wasn't so much either.
And Matt has really schooled me on Marvel and DC, and I've gotten to know this stuff.
Yeah.
Were you partial to one of the like DC, and now you're working for Marvel, or were you a Marvel
fan?
I
would say if there was something I was more partial to, it probably was Marvel, but not so much. It's funny. I was just telling somebody in the panel I was just in that I think a lot of artists that have their career in comic books, they oftentimes aren't as into comic books as people assume. They become interested in art, and comic books is a great way to make a living drawing. So you'll find a lot of comic book artists actually need to be schooled a bit once they get in the industry. Like, well, who's this guy? What's his power? You know, like, I was definitely one of those people who kind of, like, all the comic book characters I knew was because if they had a Saturday morning cartoon show. Like, I knew Spider-Man because I watched Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends.
Right.
I knew the Incredible Hulk because he had a couple shows, you know. Any of these other characters that like fell outside of not having a TV show, I was not aware that who they were, what they did, and I had to kind of teach myself.
And being someone who draws various covers, you can do any character. It just doesn't matter. Do you have a specific that you like to draw?
I mean, I'm partial to Spider-Man. It's just something about Spider-Man. I don't like drawing the generic square jawed like Spider or Superman.
Yeah, the Superman archetype.
Yeah, like the Aquamans and the Green Lanterns and all that. They just, to me, they was just like kit, look like Ken dolls in different outfits.
Yes.
Whereas Spider-Man, nobody looks like Spider-Man. His anatomy is very unique. He's very like gangly and so I like Spider-Man when he's not too muscular. He's more like like I said, kind of like lanky and stuff like much like how he was in the most recent movie. I thought that was the closest visually they've gotten to getting Spider-Man right. Because
I agree.
Spider-Man is not Superman in a Spider-Man outfit. He's a totally different build. And I like that. I like Marvel characters in general tend to be quirkier than like DC characters. They tend to like the Hulk is big and chunky and like Spider-Man's gangly. And like all of the Spider-Man's villains are weird shapes and stuff like that. Like that's the kind of stuff I love because it's just, to me, it's very unique. You can run a lot with it as far as like a unique expression. And that's definitely more up my alley. So
now I got to ask you a little bit about one of my personal favorites. Back in, I think it was the late 90s, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. You started a book with Cliffhanger.
Yes.
Called Danger Girl.
True. Yes.
And, awesome project.
Thank you.
How did they get started and where is it today?
It's funny. I had been doing, like I said, some projects with, at the time, Wildstorm, and they were all superhero-based. And I just always found that, like much like I said, I didn't really grow up with comic books as much as I was a fan of movies and things like that. To me, I was much more... I liked the idea of bringing a James Bond or an Indiana Jones element to comic books because, at the time, it just didn't seem like... I mean, there had probably been some sense then, but at the time, that felt like a really unique kind of way to go.
Yeah.
And at that time, too, I'd also created a reputation by then for having drawn women characters.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, I'll do this like group of like spy girls. Originally, there was actually going to be like five of them, but then right around that time, the Spice Girls broke.
Oh, no.
And I was like, I really don't want them to be compared to the Spice Girls. This is... yes.
There's your sound effect.
Exactly. That's what I internally said when they came around. I was like, okay, five is not a good number. I said, how about three? And I was like, well, Charlie's Angels was three. That's not great either. But Charlie's Angels was not as in the more recent memory as the Spice Girls. So I was like, okay, I'll go with three. That's a good number. And then, like, the next year, they revitalized Charlie's Angels in the movie. I was like, oh, God. So we were actually really on a fast track to getting a movie actually made. But, like, New Line had bought the rights.
I remember reading about this.
Yeah, and New Line had bought the rights and everything. And then that Charlie's Angels movie came out, and it was just, like, flatline because they're like, oh, they're making Charlie's Angels. We're not going to make this movie because that's just how Hollywood thinks, I guess. So, I mean, since then we've had, like, little blips of interest here and there and stuff like that. But that I think, killed us the most just because at a glance, it just looks like that's been done, you know. So, but if people who are fans of Danger Girl, they love to, on my behalf, crow about the differences, you know. So,
well, I have a geek confession to make to you.
Sure.
I own the entire McFarlane line of
the Danger Girl action figures. Yeah, oh, cool.
Yes,
yeah, that was one of my highlights of my career. I mean, I was such a big toy geek back then, especially the idea of having my own action figures based. I mean,
that's got to be a real treat.
That was so much fun to work with the sculptors and say, no, you got to do this little thing different. And it's like, oh, these are the accessories. It was so much fun. I mean,
that was awesome.
That was a blast. Yeah,
that is so cool. And so you travel around to a lot of these conventions.
I do. Yeah.
Does it get tiring? Because you're sitting across the way from our booth here, and I see you signing autographs and people coming with various books and things.
It's kind of nonstop. I mean, it's like a hose you can turn on and off depending on when you have to take a break and stuff like that. And sometimes you just have to walk away with people in line saying, I gotta take a lunch break, or I gotta go do this signing somewhere else. That's what I'm doing here.
Yeah,
but it's just like, I mean, it's a blessing. I mean, obviously that's a weird thing to complain about, because obviously I'm sure there's a lot of people who have booths here who would love that kind of foot traffic. But you know, because I've been doing it for a while, you do get a little bit like,
it's an old hat for
it,
you.
Yeah, it does. It is one of those things where, like, if nobody's around, it's like, and somebody comes by and goes, oh, where'd your crowd go? I'm like, I'm not bumming out about this. I like the break, you know, so.
Yeah.
So, but I'm very fortunate that I've been able to do enough of these shows to create a pretty continuous flow of fans, which is really, I'm very appreciative of.
And you mentioned that you have a calendar that you have coming out.
I do. Actually, the last few years, being that I do these shows, it's always great to have different prints and different like sketchbooks to take around.
Sure.
It's great to have like just something that the fans, when they meet you, they can kind of walk away with something.
Sure.
And a few years ago, I debuted a calendar of like kind of like pinup-y type images of like my depictions of sort of like an edgier, kind of like a little bit sexier version of like fairy tales. Because fairy tales, a lot of people don't realize that, but like even though Disney has sort of like made so many of the fairy tales famous, they are public domain. And if you, as long as you do your own interpretation that doesn't tread too much on another person's interpretation, they're kind of up for grabs. So it's great to do these sort of interpretations of these characters that everybody kind of loves and knows already, but yet you kind of like can do your own take, your own little spin on it.
That is
so
awesome.
So the calendar is called Fairy Tale Fantasies. I've done like 3 years of it, and there's going to be another one coming out this summer. And it's just fun. Like I said, I love doing... I mean, superheroes are fun, but I'm kind of bringing that superhero aesthetic, that comic book sort of way of interpreting things into like the fairy tale world and sort of like, you know, I mean, we started doing it about like 4 years ago before sort of like fairy tales became really hot with all these movies and the shows and stuff like that. So it kind of worked to our advantage because, like I said, we kind of got in at the ground level and built it up along with that sort of just genre becoming big again, you know, so that worked out pretty well for our advantage. So I've got another one of those calendars coming out in the summertime. I usually debut it at the San Diego Comic Book Convention is where that comes out.
That's nice. And for the Jawheads listening to this, if they want to buy one of these calendars online, where's the best place to find it online?
Pretty much if you go to my website, which is about as easy as you can remember if you know my name, jscottcampbell.com. I think jscottcampbellstore.com also takes you to the same place. But that's you can get prints, sketchbooks, and anything where I've drawn it, or if you just want to see what my artwork looks like, if you're unfamiliar with it, you can go there and sort of just poke around, see kind of what it's all about.
We've been asking guests that we've had on all day today what movie they're looking forward to most this summer. Do you have something that jumps out at you that you're really dying to see coming out?
I am very excited about the new Star Trek because that first one was so great. I'm intensely curious about Superman. I don't want to get my hopes up too much. Obviously, Superman's been a bit of a tricky one in recent years. Hey, there's Waldo. How's it going, Waldo?
Found him.
I am.
We were interrupted by Waldo.
It is. We're looking at Waldo right now. That's up to you guys.
I did want to ask you, I know you just came back from doing a panel here at C2E2. Do you like doing the panels?
It's funny. I like a lot of things. I dread leading up to the panel, but about 5 or 10 minutes in, I'm actually kind of cool with it. And it's kind of, you settle into the vibe. But going into it, it's always like, oh, where's that room? Am I going to be able to find it? And it's like, is there going to be nobody in there? You know, that kind of thing. You kind of start to get nervous. You know, the nerves get the better of you. And like, you think, oh, I've got to fill a whole hour. I didn't prepare. It's not you know. But thankfully, I've been doing this so long that I slowly got acclimated to public speaking without really thinking about it. Like, I'm sure there was a period of time, like anybody, where I would have been very nervous about doing that. And now it's like, I don't really think too much of it. I actually got just acclimated to public speaking in a way that just, I don't think much of it. And that's kind of cool.
That is cool, yeah.
I mean, by nature, I think if you're an artist, you're a bit of an introvert in some level. You tend not to be tremendously outgoing, but I think just this environment and doing these shows and stuff like that, you eventually kind of have to become a bit outgoing or a little bit, I guess, like, you know, because you've got people coming up to you talking to you all the time.
Yeah.
It kind of like acclimates you to kind of being a little bit more of a social person, even though I probably drew myself to comic books and drawing in a room by myself because I wasn't tremendously over the top social. So.
And finally, is there a character that you have not drawn yet that you would like the chance to draw for Marvel?
Not for Marvel. I think there's a part of me, like, I think any comic book artist at some point would like to draw Batman. I think that's one of those things where everybody would like to think, like, what would my take on Batman be, you know? And sometimes people go like, oh, you wouldn't be able to do a good Batman. You do these, like, smiling girls and this kind of stuff. And I'm thinking, like, no, you don't understand. Like, there's a way to do Batman. Everybody has their way of doing Batman that would be kind of unique and individual, and I think there's a Batman that I could do that would be very, very cool. I think
I'd like to see it.
I agree. I'd like to see that too, for sure.
Well, you never know, maybe someday.
Before we let you go, we want you to judge a segment that we call
Cinema War.
And Cinema War works like this, Jawheads. This is where me and Matt battle on a topic each week, and our judge this week, J. Scott Campbell, gets to play judge and jury. He is Judge Dredd, and he gets to tell you who he thinks won the Cinema War. Now, in honor of the poll question we had today, we are taking a Cinema War look at who is the best comic book movie director, Sam Raimi or Christopher Nolan. I'm battling for Nolan. Matt's battling for Raimi.
You want me to start? Okay. This is my first point and really the only point I need to make. That battle between Dr. Octopus and Spider-Man on top of the trains. It was shot here in Chicago. Which
can I vote already? Is that no? That's too early.
It was one of the most epic superhero battles of all time. It was seriously breathtaking. We had seen nothing like it before, and we honestly have seen nothing like it since.
Man, is this a joke? A joke as in the Joker?
Hey-o.
Nolan directed the greatest superhero movie of all time with The Dark Knight.
No, Heath Ledger was really, I don't know. I mean, that was the performance. Nolan, he's messed up a lot. I didn't really think Batman Begins was all that compelling, and I didn't really think Dark Knight Rises was all that compelling. He got the females wrong throughout the entire series, and Batman's voice, I mean, like, oh, this is the Dark Knight. But if I was the director, I would have told him to shut up, just talk normal.
But how about this, Matt? You got to remember the Batman series, movie-wise, was in bad shape when Nolan came over and rescued it. Think how good Batman Begins was, huh?
It was certainly, but you know what? The bar was set really low by Joel Schumacher with Batman. I don't even remember.
Batman and Robin.
I turned that one off.
Yes.
It's the only Batman movie I haven't seen. Nolan's good. I liked Dark Knight, fantastic movie. But overall, I think you got to go Sam Raimi because he's had more strong material. And I think it was a more challenging character.
And my final point is this. Name one comic book movie series that has three movies as good as the Batman series of Nolan. I beg to say there is none. That's it. I think Nolan has made the best trilogy when it comes to comic book movies. Done. Whew. We're button heads here. We are button heads on Cinema War. Nothing new. We throw it to our judge, J. Scott Campbell. What'd you think of the Cinema War?
While I have tremendous and uber respect for Nolan, and I am a fan of much of his work, I am a slightly bigger fan of Raimi. I think Raimi is an unapologetic comic book filmmaker, and I think Nolan was trying to make Batman into something other than a comic book. I think he was going for something a little, obviously, he was trying to reground Batman because Batman was up here in the Flutterverse after, the Schumacher debacles. But I think ultimately, Raimi was the unapologetic comic book movie maker.
So you're going with me?
I'm going with
you. Oh, yeah.
Wow. Matt K. Sweet. Wins. That earns you a couple seconds to rant and rave or just thank Scott for coming
and
on the show.
And he did bribe me earlier before we started bribing.
Yeah, that's right. I got your beer after the show.
Who's to say? This controversy goes on.
My rant is simply, if you haven't been to C2E2 in Chicago and you live anywhere in the Midwest, you should absolutely come. And when you do, stop by J. Scott Campbell's booth. There's going to be a line, but it's worth waiting on that line for sure.
I appreciate the plug.
Yeah, Scott, can we expect to see you at the Hyatt Bar later tonight?
I imagine the chances are better than average, absolutely.
We'll get you up here.
Awesome.
Sounds
Thanks
good.
For coming on.
My pleasure.
Thanks a lot. All right, it's Matt Kay. We're back here at C2E2. I'm with Rye the Movie Guy, and we are joined now by the man, Lance Fensterman. Matt, how's it going, dude?
Good. I like that you have like a handle that you're Matt Kay.
It's my, yeah.
Hey,
nobody
Ryan
can pronounce my last name, so I just go with Matt K.
It sounds like Mac. Like Mac K.
I actually considered just spelling it M-A-T, you know, Q-U-E, like Matt K.
Whoa. Matt, it should be noted here, we are really getting to be big time when we get Lance here. For the jawheads who do not know this, Lance runs this entire show.
I know.
I was thinking that you're gonna. There's a sign of getting to be big time that you made a 227 reference. Apparently not. I don't know that it's a sign of the big time, but yeah, you know, here I am.
Yeah.
Hanging with you guys.
Lance was on the Cinema Jaw a couple years ago when C2E2 was first
in its infancy. Yes.
Coming to Chicago, and I have to say, this year, is it just me or is it exceptionally bigger? It is big.
Thank you.
You get that a lot.
Yeah. No, it is 30% bigger, actually. The show floor is about 30% bigger, and then I don't even know how big the audience is going to be yet, but right now we're like between 30% and 40% in terms of actual people growth, so it's pretty cool.
Wow.
Actually, it's jumping. If you remember, and you may or may not, it's 2013 now, which you remember that, of course. But in 2011, we were in this same hall here at McCormick Place, and
yes,
we took up half of it.
I do recall that. Yeah.
There was a wall that ran right in the middle of that big food court I'm looking at that none of the people listening to this can see, but trust me, it's there. And we were all on the other side of that, so it's pretty cool.
It seemed big to me even then, and I walked in here this year, and I'm like, oh my God, that wall isn't there. It's like twice as big.
We took Reagan's advice, and we tore down that wall.
Well done.
Was that like a 20-year-old reference that I shouldn't be doing? That was very Dennis Miller-esque of me, wasn't it?
Oh, we love it. We love it here. And, you know, I noticed when I went to the food court, I mean, it's the other side has got a stage going on over on that side. I thought,
yeah,
oh, my God, I didn't even realize there's even more on this side of the room.
There's more. There's always more. More
is,
everything.
Is Kevin Smith that big of a draw? Because he is here tonight performing a night with Kevin Smith.
He's a big draw, but also, you know, this afternoon we had Patton Oswalt doing a Q&A.
Yeah, he's huge.
Ron Perlman was doing a panel and doing some signings. I think Game of Thrones is tomorrow. There was another big panel today. But also Saturday is just Saturday. It's always a busy day. But I think tomorrow is going to prove to be just as busy as well. So I mean, we're close to it. That's my crystal ball prognostication.
Sure. We'll be here for sure. Yeah.
And speaking of these guests, are you involved in getting some of these bigger names like Kevin Smith? Do you, before the fest comes up, do you reach out to them to see if they're available?
Yeah, we do. I don't personally, but someone on the team who does all of our talent, all of our content, all of our panels. Actually, there's about three people there, Kim Muller and her team. They do all of that and really put it together. There's like, I don't know the exact number, but I think there's about 120, 150 panels or special events here over the course of 3 days. So they do a lot of work. They earn their money.
And Lance, let me just say publicly, I mentioned it to you last night, your staff is just amazing. They
thank
do a great job here.
Thank you. Honestly, I'm not going to lie to you. I don't really do that much at the show. I just sort of, I put out fires and make decisions and walk around a lot because the team has control of the show. They're awesome. They're fans just like everybody here, and they do a great job building a party just for these fans.
That's the key to this successful event, you know?
Hells yes.
And I happened to catch your cameo in With Great Power, the documentary about Stan Lee. Did you notice that?
No, I had no idea I was even in it.
It's on Netflix Instant, so tonight or after the show when you get a chance, you should watch it. You're in there. It's a flash.
Okay,
but I'm like, there's Lance!
That's enough. That's all I need is a flash. That's all it's going to take.
You're shaking hands with the man.
I am going to capitalize on that.
Which I don't mean in the usual sense of that statement.
Yes. I meant
Stan.
Yes, of course. Yeah. And I'm gonna use that. I'm gonna start doing the con circuit myself. I'm gonna start doing autographings. I'll get headshots, and I'll be like, I was the guy that appeared in With Great Power, and they'll be like, what part of it? It was like, don't worry about it. I was in it.
Yeah.
Just give me $20, and I'll sign that thing.
I wanted to know too, because you guys, ReadPop actually does these conventions all over the country and world now, correct?
All over the world, yeah. We've taken PAX, which is Penny Arcade Expo, which is our video game brand. We launched that in Melbourne, Australia. That'll be July. Star Wars Celebration, which is our deal with Lucasfilm, that we've taken to Germany. And I guarantee you, within a matter of weeks, you'll hear at least two other continents that ReadPop will be launching events on. It's pretty cool.
Congratulations.
Thanks,
that's
man.
Fantastic.
Thank you. I now have coins from around the world. It's very exciting. Like when I'm going through my pockets to do my laundry, it's like, what's that?
Well, there's a currency exchange on the corner, so they'll help you out.
I had this idea of, this is a total tangent, of just bringing the sack of money of like coins from literally 12 countries to like the TravelX desk and being like, American, please, and just letting them like sort of do it all.
Yeah, you guys figure this out.
Yeah, you've got 62 cents worth of kroners. Great, bring it on. You know, give me dollars. They'd kill me, yeah.
That's great. And I know last time you were on CinemaJaw, you took Matt on, I believe, in animation movie trivia.
Yes.
And you lost.
Right. I did. I think it was fairly close. It came down to the final question, I recall. And it was something about who was Matty K's third grade teacher. It was, frankly, it was a bunch of BS.
Wow.
I'm saying. Yeah.
Here's your chance, Lance.
So we want to have a rematch here. And in honor of The Great Gatsby coming out in theaters, we are playing Leonardo DiCaprio, Tobey Maguire movie trivia.
Oh, Jesus.
Just real quick, F. Scott Fitzgerald, where was he born? You don't know. St. Paul, Minnesota. Where am I from? St. Paul, Minnesota.
Oh,
bring
yeah.
it.
Well done.
I'm already ahead. We haven't even started.
That's right.
All right, so you're our guest, Lance. You get to choose if you want to go first or let Matt go first.
Matt goes first.
And there are steals, and if Matt doesn't know it, you get a chance. All right, question number one, Matt. In DiCaprio Maguire movie trivia. In Tobey Maguire, Sam Raimi's Spider-Man series, Gwen Stacy did not appear until the third film. Which actress ended up playing her?
Jeez, man. I should know this, but it was such a crappy movie, I don't remember. Amy Adams. I got nothing. Nothing. Lance is going to know this right away.
Lance, you got a chance for a steal and to take a 1-0 lead here.
Abe Vigoda.
Oh, I thought he was right. I was like, he knew it.
We were looking for Bryce Dallas Howard.
That's
whatever.
Right.
Who,
yeah.
Who
she's Ron Howard's daughter.
Oh, but she, like he's like, oh, that's
oh,
right, yeah.
Right.
No, I remember what? Now. I remember. Oh, she was also in Lady in the Water, and she's, yeah. She's actually a good actress.
Well, let's see here. Question number two is over to Lance. The only time DiCaprio worked with Clint Eastwood was in this 2011 FBI film where his mother was played by Judi Dench.
These
J. Edgar.
Nice. One to nothing, Lance. One to nothing, Lance. Question number three over to Matt Kay. Tobey Maguire appeared briefly in 1993's This Boy's a Life alongside DiCaprio, in which Leo played a boy abused by his mom's new husband, Dwight. What actor played that abusive husband?
These are tough, man.
This is a big-name actor and
Mark
DiCaprio.
Ruffalo. Mark Ruffalo. Oh, man.
Robert De Niro.
Oh, my God. I'm
Lance is killing this thing. Lance is killing this thing. It is 2-0.
Holy crap, groupies are forming.
Yes.
Look at him. I'll be right with you, man.
Question number four is over to Lance. In 1992's The Cider House Rules, Tobey Maguire played a boy raised in an orphanage, which was run by Dr. Wilbur. Which actor played Dr. Wilbur?
Michael Caine.
I was going to say Mr. Ed.
Wow. Wow. Revenge. Revenge
even
from
the,
Lance.
Even the jokes are bad right now. Yes. Man. You need a win right here.
It
you
is 3-0, Lance. It's a slaughter at this point.
I got to just get on the board.
Question number five, Matt. DiCaprio played Danny Archer and teamed up with Jennifer Connelly in this 2006 film set in Africa. Leonardo DiCaprio, Jennifer Connelly, set in Africa. What do you got, Matt?
Do
you want me just to answer it now?
I got nothing, man. Jeez, this is terrible.
Lance, you got a chance for a steal.
I was going to give him a hint, but it's Blood Diamond.
See, my brain is just not firing. This is what C2E2
does to me. Dude, I've been running
me.
A convention
know,
for the
right?
last 3 days,
no excuses.
And you're like, oh, man, I'm wiped out.
It is 4-0, Lance, and question number six is over to him. In 2009, Tobey Maguire teamed up with Jake Gyllenhaal and Natalie Portman in this Afghanistan war story in which he was prematurely pronounced dead.
Jarhead?
Got a chance for a steal here, man.
I need it, too.
Gyllenhaal, Natalie Portman, Tobey Maguire, an Afghanistan war story.
Oh, I got it. Brothers.
Oh, yes. Wow.
I'm on the board.
That.
You are on the board.
Nice.
It is 4-1.
Thank God.
And question number seven is over to you, Matt. In 2010's underrated Shutter Island,
yes.
DiCaprio played a cop who was losing his mind after the death of his wife.
Yeah.
Which actress played his wife?
Oh, man. I thought you were going to go which actor played his partner, which was Mark Ruffalo.
No.
Damn it.
No, what actress played his wife in Shutter Island?
I have no freaking idea.
Got to have a guess.
Nothing. Nicole Kidman. Who was it?
Got a chance for a steal here, Lance.
I don't know. I'm going to go Jennifer Connelly, but I don't know.
We were looking for Michelle Williams, Dawson Creek alum.
Yes.
It is still 4-1, Lance. This is the last question of the game, so it's over. But you might as well just slaughter him here, Lance.
At least I'm on the board.
Yeah, you are.
Lance, Toby starred with Michael Douglas in Wonder Boys, where his book, The Love Parade, gets picked up by the publisher Terry Crabtree. Who played that character?
That is some esoteric stuff
yeah,
right
who
there.
Who played
man.
Terry Crabtree?
Yes. Well, just think of the other main actor in Wonder Boys. You got a shot.
Jeff Bridges? Bo Bridges.
Chance for a steal
Lloyd
here.
Bridges.
Chance for a steal here, Matt.
Yeah. Was it Bobby Duvall? Who was it?
We were looking for Iron Man himself, Robert Downey Jr.
I don't think I ever saw Wonder Boys.
This is over, though, and he won it convincingly, Matt.
Yes, well
Lance
done.
Takes this one 4-1, a little revenge.
It was fun. It felt good. Vanquishing foes has always been a hobby of mine, and doing it with great fervor, it makes it all the sweeter.
I couldn't have said it better. That was well done.
Before we let you go, we've been asking all our guests, we've been doing sort of a summer movie preview as we get ready to hit this season of film going. Do you have a movie this summer coming out that you're looking forward to more above the rest? I know you're a busy guy.
I cannot lie to you. I this summer is horrible for me, so I don't even know what's coming out right now. I'm so buried. I don't pick my head up again until September. So you tell me what should I... If I get to watch one movie this summer, you tell me what it should be.
I know this is going to sound crazy. I love The Great Gatsby with Leonardo DiCaprio, but I think Man of Steel.
You know what? That's a good one because I think Warner DC is poised here. I think they're poised.
They've got to be, right? They got to catch up with Marvel. I actually agree with Rye. I'm saying that that's the one to see this summer. It's
we've seen Iron Man, we've seen Wolverine before, we've not seen this, so and this is their moment. They're either going to make it or break it.
I agree. So all right, that's on my calendar. That's on my to-do list.
That's sweet. Great. Lance, we gotta thank you again for stopping
my
by.
My pleasure.
And for the jawheads that listen around the country and world, we got some people over there in England. Where's the best place to find out more about Reed Pop?
Just go to readpop.com and or follow me on Twitter at L. Fensterman, but, you know, interact. Let's talk. Let's have a dialogue. I like talking to people, clearly.
Well, you do a great job here.
That was the worst, like, ending to this. I think this was a pretty good chat, and that's what I say. Let's dialogue. I like talking to people.
Oh.
You know what? I'm going to be controversial. Don't fucking talk to me. That's a better ending, don't you think?
You see me on Twitter. Don't fucking send me an ad.
Yeah. I'm just kidding. Thanks for a great time,
yeah,
guys.
Lance, thanks again.
All right, my pleasure.
Thanks, Lance.
Wow, Matt, what an unbelievable set of interviews. We were able to get J. Scott Campbell. We were able to talk to Bruce Boxleitner.
Yeah, we found Waldo in the middle of that one.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Oh, man, what an absolute blast it's been here at C2E2. Before we forget, I mean, poor Elias. It was very heavy to bring the jaw box all the way over here to McCormick Place.
You made me carry it the whole way.
He's probably dead in there.
Yeah, let's make sure he's not.
Yeah, let's open up the jaw box and see what Elias has thought of this C2E2.
What's your pleasure, Mr. Cotton?
The box.
We got a box! Oh, what's in the box?
What is going on, guys? Thanks for bringing me here. I really appreciate it. Not only that, you guys fed me some Revolution Brewery beer, the Galaxy beer, which I really appreciated that.
Yeah, that was the official beer of C2E2.
Yeah, shout out to them. Seriously, I'm getting my buzz on. It was dark in here. You know, I didn't get to buy any paraphernalia, but that's all right.
Really, we just, I'm glad you thought we were feeding it to you. We just kind of spilled a beer on top of the jaw box.
So okay.
It went in through the air hole. So.
That's why.
Elias, this is your first time... as an engineer for Cinema Jaw at a C2E2, what do you think of the event?
It was a lot of fun. You guys handled it really well. Anybody who met you guys here, you guys were very talkative and whatnot. And even with the guests, you know, we were on the fly here talking to the Tron guy, and you guys handled that really well.
Bruce Boxleitner.
Yes. So I think it was a success. And, yeah, to shout out to all the new listeners who signed up for our poster giveaways.
Yeah, you know, we gave away two posters here, one of The Shining and one of Ron Burgundy himself. And that went over huge.
Yeah, that was a hit.
Thanks for everybody who started following us on Facebook and following us on Twitter. We're always just trying to get the word out about Cinema Jaw.
Yeah.
Yeah, can't thank them enough. Thanks for signing up, guys.
And shout out to the old school jawheads, too.
For sure.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. New fans, new and old.
And we had a poll question going, too, actually. The first one was, which superhero movie do you want to see most this summer? And the poll is now closed. Iron Man 3, Man of Steel, or Wolverine? And, Matt, we have a winner.
We do. It was tight. It was really tight. The Wolverine took third place.
Far in the back.
Yeah. But Iron Man 3 and Man of Steel were pretty close, but Iron Man 3 had a clear victory here.
It did. Iron Man 3 wins. After we closed that poll, we threw out another poll question, which curtailed on our cinema war that we had here, Matt. Who is the best comic book movie director?
Yep.
Josh Whedon, Christopher Nolan, or Sam Raimi? And this was... Sam Raimi almost got no votes, even though somehow you convinced J. Scott Campbell that he was the best director.
I know. Well, you know, I'm a master.
He came in a far third, but Matt, we got a winner here as well.
I'm a master debater, or at least, you know, masturbator. It was a landslide on this one. Joss Whedon, by far.
I know.
I mean, it's amazing. Christopher Nolan got a lot of love, not so much for Sam Raimi, but... Joss Whedon, they started putting stickers over his name. They ran out of room.
For all the jawheads that stopped by our booth, I mean, we're talking over 200 votes on this poll. Thank you for voting.
Yeah, check out the photo of the board on our Facebook page, Jawheads Listening at Home.
Yeah, and also check out photos of all our guests. We took photos. They all stopped by our booth and were able to take photos with. Elias did a great job there as well.
And as long as we're talking photos, I mean, I got definitely a few of some of the crazy costumes I've seen today. So we'll throw a couple of those in, too.
Yeah, and Matt dressed up as a brony, everybody. I didn't get a photo of that. He would not allow me to.
Let's not talk brony. Come on. We're going out on a high note here.
What was it? Clopping?
Oh, man. Shout out to our Brony fans.
Oh, boy. Good times. Elias, we can't thank you enough. We always call him the best in the business when it comes to being an engineer. But on an event like this, on a scale of C2E2, with all that you've done, thanks a lot.
Thanks, guys. It was a blast.
Thanks, Elias.
We also got to thank our sponsors.
Yeah, thanks to the new 400 Theaters.
Yes. If you are in the Rogers Park area of Chicago, there is no better theater than the new 400. They have a full liquor bar, digital projection, upgraded their sound. I'm a huge fan of the new 400. And Jawheads, you know how picky I am when it comes to viewing my movies.
That's very true.
Check out what's playing at the new 400 at their website, thenew400.com.
And thanks to MoviePass for sponsoring the show.
Until next week, check us out on Facebook.
Follow us on Twitter.
And keep on jawing about the movies.
Cheers.